your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Your Fitbit, your Apple Watch. Well, they're adapting them for use in the workplace. They're definitely coming. A lot of leaders of organizations say it's not a matter of if, but when. Good news, bad news. Workplace wearables. Well, a University of London study found that wearables increase productivity by 8.5%, and this is what surprised me, job satisfaction by 3.5%. So, not surprisingly, a Tractica research report projects that workplace wearables, those adaptations of Apple Watches and Fitbit-like devices, are projected to increase from just 2 million units in 2015 to 66 million by 2021, less than 3 years away. Well, let's see if we can paint a picture of what that might look like. What might a day in the life of a workwear-wearing worker look like? I should point out, by the way, though, while I'm going to be, because the listenership to the show tends to be more of the middle class, white collar workers, I'm going to use an example that's that. But, you know, I also have been reading that they're being used by warehouse workers who are thrilled with it because they used to have to carry around an iPad in one hand to first find out where the item they need to pull off the shelf is, and then have to keep the iPad in one hand while they're taking the other item off the shelf. And with a wearable, like something that would be a visor, something you would wear on your forehead, your hand, both hands are free. But in any case, I want to focus on a kind of a typical white-collar level worker and what he or she might be like in 2000, you know, in a couple of years from now, in light of the already available technology, by the way. It's just a matter of adoption. We're going to call it Julie, and we'll start in the morning. Julie races out of her house. She jumps in the car and soon hits the inevitable gridlock. Her bracelet vibrates to let her know that her cortisol level, cortisol is a key stress hormone, is elevated, is up. So it's time for her to take a deep breath, which she does, and she chooses to. She doesn't have to, but she chooses to. After which, her bracelet chimes approval. She then arrives at work, and instead of having to fumble for her badge, the door recognizes her from her bracelet. So she then arrives at a desk, and no password required. Her bracelet opens the file that contains her employer's draft strategic plan. She studies that for a while, and she's really getting engaged in it. But after an hour, the bracelet vibrates, which reminds her that it's healthy to get out of the chair at least 5 minutes an hour. Her boss, who today is working remotely, sees all of her supervisees' productivity stats that are beamed from their bracelets, whether they're working at home or in the San Francisco office or in one of the satellite offices, say, in Beijing or London. And Julia is glad about that because, as a woman of color, she is glad that that's a relatively color and gender-neutral index of her performance. One less thing to worry about. Okay, next, Julie is going to take a break from studying that strategic plan. She dons her virtual reality headset and takes the next lesson in a course called Keys to Great Public Speaking, The Art of Answering Audience Questions. So her headset projects her onto a virtual stage with audience members asking her a question, for example, how did you come up with that idea? And Julia actually stands up. She looks into her webcam, answers the question, which is recorded, of course, and the artificial intelligence enhanced program gives her feedback on her posture, her eye contact, her tone of voice, and how concise she was. Then she actually just watches herself on the video and rates herself on those factors. Plus, she rates her quality of what she perceives as the quality of her answer's content. Now, near the end of the workday, Julia is going to push a button on her bracelet, which reveals a pie chart of how she allocated her time today. And she decides that tomorrow she's going to spend less time on that strategic plan and more on mentoring her supervisees. Just before she's about to leave for home, a coworker asks her to move a heavy box. As she starts to lift it, the bracelet vibrates, and the screen suggests, to protect your back, consider bending your knees as you lift. She does so, and then Julia returns to her car, and while the traffic is as bad going home as it was in the morning rush hour, she now isn't as rushed, and so when she pushes her bracelet's stress level button, it chimes a thumbs up. Now, as I said, all of the above technology is already available, usually on smartphones, or is in late development, as in the case with that cortisol stress monitor. Of course, some people's reaction to this is, ew, it feels big brothery, invasive, micromanaging, and evoking worry about the potential for breaching privacy. For example, let's say a manager sees a supervisee with an ongoing high level of cortisol, that stress hormone. Sure, that could be beneficial to the worker. It's an early warning sign that the manager should lighten the workload or provide more support. But what if that employee feels that that amount of stress is manageable for him or her? Or that the stress reading algorithm isn't accurate for him or her? There's huge individual differences. Shouldn't workers whose high stress level isn't hurting their performance or bothering anyone else, shouldn't that person be allowed to keep that information about their cortisol to themselves? Now, of course, many people have grown used to micrometric management. For example, in many workplaces, customer service reps have long been evaluated on what the average length of a call has been, what the percentage of issues they resolved were, and the caller feedback. You know, stay on hold and press 2 if you'd like to take a brief survey. Think about how often you've been called customer service, and they, before even putting you in the queue, you're asked if you would answer the brief survey at the end of the call. Another concern about workplace wearables is their use in measuring employee productivity. The data would be quantitative, while in most jobs, the work's quality is at least as important as its quantity. It's true of even in low-level jobs. I mean, a Fitbit could track a number of steps that the aforementioned warehouse product picker takes, but it's not going to assess the percentage of the time that that warehouse worker pulls the right product from the shelf, let alone whether that worker, seeing an item that's in the wrong place, puts it back in the right place. Well, probably a solution resides in recognizing that the device's measure of productivity, which is going to be quantitative, has got to be combined with subjective assessment. There's yet more concerns that are raised. And by the way, I'm raising all of these pros and cons. I'm presenting the promise and the perils because I'm going to go to the phones in a minute and get your take on workplace wearables, whether it be, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, amplification, thoughts about it. But there certainly is another couple of concerns I want to raise, which is security. For example, countless watches, you know, regular wristwatches, are stolen right out of off a person's wrist on those crowded bar trains. By the time the employee realizes that, the thief could have gained access to the organization's proprietary information and then later sell it to a competitor. One solution is, instead of the bracelet, to, yeah, embed a small chip under the employee's skin, but that really tends to evoke that ew factor I mentioned, so there are really very few workplaces that are considering that, although I heard they tried it in Sweden, or they're doing it in Sweden. I haven't checked recently. And finally, there is the issue of transparency. I could imagine employers wanting to gather data that's useful to the organization, for-profit or nonprofit, but that might yield employee resistance if they told them that they were doing it, and so not inform the workers, at least from where I sit. Transparency is a not negotiable, both for ethical reasons and to encourage employee support for the use of workplace wearables. If there's a rumor going around that there's all this other data that's getting collected on them, they're going to, they'll just be a rebellion appropriately. So, anyway, as with most innovations, work wearables bring promise and peril, but the fact is they are coming. The question is, how do you feel about it? What aspects of work wearables would you support or resist? What rules would you have? What are your thoughts of any sort? The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, if you have a comment or a question about workplace wearables, 415-841-4134. That's the number here at KALW and Work with Marty Nemko. Again, the number 415-841-4134. And as always, a core purpose of this show is to help you with your individual work-life problem. So if you are unhappy at work, unemployed, or well-employed and still unhappy, work for for-profit, non-profit, self-employed, want to run your business idea by me, whether you're 16 or 76, frankly, the harder the better. I've been doing this 29 years as of October 1st. It's free. You can call, and this is a good time to call when the lines are available. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, either because you want to comment on workplace wearables or you've got a work-related problem you would like to me to do a workover on you. The phone number, 415-841-4134. I want to share with you an idea that is fresh and important and new for job seekers. It's called the influencing letter. everybody kind of de rigueur. It's expected you're going to write a thank you note after getting a job interview. But you can do a lot better than that. If you thank them, I'm going to explain why. If you thank them for the opportunity, the employer that is, for the opportunity for no pay to get grilled, that can be perceived as toadying, if not actually being disingenuous, right? It's unlikely to help, certainly, to levitate you to the top of the applicant pile. It's far better to write what I call an influencing letter. I'm going to share what that's like. Dear, and you list the name of the person, the main, you don't have to send it to everybody. That seems like it's trying a little too hard. Dear, the person who is the main interviewer or your potential boss, say something like, I welcomed the opportunity to interview with you for the job as a whatever, because they may have lots of jobs advertised. You want to make sure it's clear what job is for. You then write, I was impressed that, and then you insert one or two positive things about the organization or about the quality of the interview. You then say, I am pleased that you showed special interest in my whatever, insert some key skill or accomplishment that you sensed the interviewers seemed to especially appreciate. Then you say, I did have a chance to additionally reflect on the question you asked me about whatever, insert some question you flubbed. And you say then, on reflection, and then you can insert your improved answer. It gives you a second bite at the apple. The letter would continue, the interview suggested that you'd like the successful candidate to, and then you insert some challenge that you'd be facing on the job. And you then say, you might find it helpful to hear my thoughts on that. And then you insert a brief kind of laying out of your ideas or your plan. But you need, you know, lest you seem like you're too sure of yourself, you say something like, of course, I might need to know more about the situation before acting, but that gives you a window into the way I think. And then, if it's true, you say something like, you end with something like, the interview led me to be more interested than ever in the job because, and then you cite a key match between the job requirement and one of your skills or abilities. Or cite something you like about the job or about the organization that was revealed in the interview. And you simply end by saying, so I look forward to hearing from you sincerely. That is, if I can say so, infinitely more likely to help your chances of getting the job than the standard toadying thank you letter. Now, I do need to give a caveat. Job search tactics like the influencing letter, yeah, they can help you land the job, but they shouldn't distract you from the more central issues. Are you truly competent to do the job well? Will you fit in well with that organization's culture? For example, if your priority is work-life balance, before accepting the position, you should ask about the expected work week. Some job seekers get so focused on landing the job, they fail to consider all the implications and end up being unhappy and soon pounding the pavement again, this time having to explain why you left your previous job so quickly. So it's really important that you don't get simply focused on these job search tactics, but really vet all prospective jobs carefully. How do you do that? You read between the lines in the job ad. Would you likely be the top of the pile? Put yourself in the employer's shoes. And would you actually like and do well at that job? Ask employees there, your colleagues, your LinkedIn connections, and review employee reviews of the organization on Glassdoor. That'll give you a sense of that workplace. Ask a couple of probing questions during the interview. For example, what makes you different from other bosses? What should I know about working here that mightn't appear in the employee handbook? What would you hope I'd accomplish in the first 30 days? Then consider other factors before you go and take the job. Not just the compensation, but for example, how ethical does the organization appear? And how about that commute? The traffic, as you well know, living here in the Bay Area, ain't going to get better, and it's going to certainly add a lot of time to every one of your workdays. You know, it's fine to use the advanced kind of job search tactics I'm telling you about, like the influencing letter, but you also need to be a good vetter, if that's a word, of job openings, because that combination is going to really boost your chances of becoming happily employed and of making a difference. Anyway, the influencing letter. I thought you'd I'd share that with you. I also want to share with you the phone number. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko here on KALW. What we do here is workovers. If you've got a work-related problem, you call in, and I try to help you solve it. And as well, I did my opening monologue, if you will, about workplace wearables. I laid out some pros and cons of having these workplace-adapted Fitbits and Apple Watches, which offer great, you know, most workers really like them, and employers certainly do, leads to productivity, but there are issues about their accuracy, micromanagement, big brothery invasiveness, security, transparency. So I'd welcome your thoughts about that either. So either for a workover, or you want to comment about the pros and cons of workplace wearables, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I want to share a couple of other current musings that I'm having about things that are working that are new, not the standard old stuff. You know, a standard old-fashioned networking strategy has been touted since the 80s or 90s, is to reach out to prospective employers that aren't advertising a position. That is working ever less well. These days, so many people are applying for jobs through the internet, and bosses are working ever harder. They don't have time for informational interviews unless they know you or a family member or a friend really well. But these days, what's working better than that networking idea is to have an ahead-of-the-pack LinkedIn profile, because that's what employers are using all the time to screen people, as well as getting your buds, your friends, your colleagues, to tout you to employers that they know well. If you do it yourself, it's askance. There is so much sense that there's exaggeration, that job seekers exaggerate. But if your respected friends tout you to potential employers, that can open doors a lot more than simply trying to reach out to prospective employers that aren't advertising a position. I'll give out the phone number again, then we'll go right to the phones. If you have a work-related problem, want to work over, or have a comment about workplace wearables, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Is this me?
It is.
Excellent. I've worked as a school librarian for the past 18 years, and my position was recently eliminated. Mm. And so now I'm kind of so loose and fancy free, but also wondering what my life, work, and life balance is going to look like from here on.
I want to start with a little statement, and then I'll ask you some more questions.
Okay.
I have said on this radio show, I love librarians, and I love the career of librarianship. I think that the field represents the perfect combination of being intellectually stimulating, helpful to people, in a clearly lovely environment. And I just think librarians are just wonderful, empowering people of all stripes who can, the information of the world and the entertainment of the world is fully accessible thanks to librarians. Do you think I'm being hyperbolic here? Or do you think that's a fair statement?
Oh, I think that's a fair statement.
Okay. So, tell me, I need some clues from you to give me something to work from.
Mm-hmm, sure.
If they hadn't eliminated your position, what were you happy about in that job, and what were you not so happy about in that job?
I loved my coworkers, and I loved our students. And what I didn't love was a lot of political, interpersonal politics and feeling underappreciated and some administrative changes that had gone on.
Okay. And what if there was a goddess and the goddess looked down upon you and said, this is what you are really great at and this is what you're yucky at? What would the goddess say?
I don't know what the goddess would say.
In regard to your current, in regard to either the work within your librarianship work or outside, what would the goddess say you're good at, either by training or by nature, good at and bad at?
The goddess would say I'm bad at paperwork.
Okay.
But I'm good at caring and doing things for others.
Okay. And let's now move from that to your interests. Are you mainly, there are some people who are very caring but prefer to work directly one-on-one with people, others to manage helping professionals, and others who want to help in a more indirect way, whether it be by writing or doing research or doing whatever. What kind of care, what way would you best demonstrate your caring in a work environment?
In a work environment, I think I'm more a little more behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, like, I really liked helping the teachers to do what they needed to do.
Okay. And so, do you, when I say the word training of adults, does that, is that warm your heart or chill your soul?
Chills my soul.
Okay. What, so let's say the riddle for the moment is you're working behind the scenes with mm-hmm. adults. Is that mm-hmm. part right?
Yes.
Okay. And is the setting going to be in education, in some other nonprofit, for a company, self-employed, or for the government?
Probably not self-employed, and the other three would all be fine: school, nonprofit, or government.
Okay, great. Let's stay.
And then my other thought is: uh-huh. is there a way I can work part time?
Okay, so let's throw in the part time. Okay, and so if let's see if we could narrow down. If I'm going to mention specifics, and you're going to tell me emotionally how you feel about it. You're working for a startup. Turn up or turn thumbs up or thumbs down.
Thumbs. Probably down.
Okay. A large company, a large Clorox. I'm picking one at random.
I'm sorry, which company?
Clorox.
Kind of neutral.
Neutral. A non-profit, for a charity you have donated money to or time in the past.
Thumbs up.
Okay. What would the charity that you most believe in and or have donated the most money or time to so far?
Something either probably in education or like Habitat for Humanity.
Great. Let's stay with education. Let's stay with education because you got that background which could leverage and make you more employable at a decent wage.
Mm-hmm.
So an education nonprofit, or now I'm going to go to the government. Would you rather, I'm going to give you two choices. You simply tell me which government agency you'd be happier working for. An environmental protection agency, since you mentioned Habitat. Or housing. Would you rather work for housing or an education agency?
I don't really have a strong preference.
Great. Let's create a meter. Can I ask you what your first name is?
Nancy.
We're going to create a Nancy meter, and the Nancy meter goes from 0 to 10. With 0 means the idea makes you puke, and 10 means it gives you ecstasy. Okay?
Okay.
Right. So you're going to work for the San Francisco Unified School District supporting teachers in some way. What is that score?
Probably 7 or 8.
7 or 8. And now there is a nonprofit that raises money privately to fund the schools called Ed something. I forget, the Ed Foundation or whatever. What is that score on working behind the scenes for in some way, be in their fundraising or in their operations department?
It's more like a 5.
Okay. And now you're working for a. So let's build on the San Francisco Unified School District. Let's say I am the superintendent of the San Francisco Unified School District. And I say to you, Nancy, you know, I've heard great things about you. I really like you. You're a lovely person. And I want to give you any job you want for the district as long as it brings out the best in you. What do you know what job that might be?
No.
Okay. So I'll give you two choices again. You simply pick which one feels better. Okay?
Okay.
You're going to work in the curriculum and instruction department, in the diversity management department. Which of those two?
I have more experience in curriculum.
Which do you? We're trying to move. We don't want you chained to your past necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
want, as you say, we want to treat this as a launch pad for the next phase in your life. Would you rather still, I mean, I'm not against curriculum, of course. Would you rather work in curriculum or diversity?
I'm not really sure what diversity would mean in that.
It would
setting.
Be.
I mean, I know what diversity means.
Means but, prevent. Like, it means in hiring more diverse people. It means resolving problems. It means doing trainings related to diversity.
I think diversity.
Okay, and within diversity, I'm just. Are you more interested in gender diversity, moving away from binary and educating kids and whatever about everything from, you know, transgender to gender, you know, ambiguous to et cetera, or mm-hmm. more racial diversity, or immigrants, or you know, language diversity? What is there a specific kind of diversity that's of interest to you? Or not really? Or are we barking up the wrong tree?
Not really. No, it's all so important.
It's all so important. Okay, I'd like to hear you say that. So, if I said for today's phone call, mm-hmm. we have identified a niche for you to investigate, it would be unprofessional of me to say we've done it. No, we haven't.
Right.
But what we have done is we have identified an area for you to pursue. What city do you live in?
I live in Daly City.
Okay, great. So that puts you kind of equidistant between San Francisco and perhaps there's a separate district for South San Francisco mm-hmm. and maybe down towards San Mateo. You know, mm-hmm. I want you to visit the websites of the school districts in that area. And also, there is San Mateo County School has a separate bureaucracy, the San Francisco County Office of County Office of Education.
I know it well.
Great. Okay. I want you to play, and that's the operative word, play, mm-hmm. on their websites to see the range of diversity initiatives that are extant there. I then want you, having learned about the range of things and seeing the kind of perhaps jobs of open, if any, but even if they're not, I want you to fashion a letter of introduction of yourself to the director, whatever they call it, director or you know, manager of diversity programs at one or more of those entities, San Francisco Unified School District, South San Francisco Unified uh-huh. School District, San Mateo, and then do nothing. Do not send it. Meditate upon it. Because what I've done is I've asked you to concretize your thinking. And you will either find that over a week's time, that mm-hmm. idea will ferment into vinegar, in which case you just shred the paper, recycle it, or it will ferment into fine wine, in which case mm-hmm. you then can send the letter or revise it, having looked at it with fresh eyes, and you've at least taken a baby step that is low risk toward finding your next step. How does that feel, Nancy?
That feels good.
I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I'll give out the phone number again if you would like a workover. If you've got any work-related problem, you don't have to be looking for a new job. It could be in your existing job or your existing business or your existing vision. Any kind of work-related problem is fair game. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for your patience. I know you've been waiting a long time.
Oh, that's fine. How are you?
I am well. What gives me the honor of the call?
Okay. So, I have been noticing some issue, probably is an issue with me or the way I conduct it. So, this has been two jobs in the system. I performed very well. I got good reviews from the...
By the way, do you have your radio on? Because I'm hearing something. I'm hearing a sound in the background that's making it difficult to understand.
Let me just please get do. On the side here.
Thank you
I'm
very much.
I'm sitting in the restaurant. I apologize.
Great.
Can you hear me now?
I do hear you much better. Thank you. Continue.
Okay, I'm so sorry. So I said, on two jobs in succession, what happened, despite of performing well, I kind of got into the politics of the company who had deployed me there.
Can you be specific? Give me one specific example that would be instructive to me in trying to help you.
Okay, so an example would be I started as an architect, and then they needed a PM, so they said, you are the PM now.
Right. Project. So for those who don't know, PM is project manager. Okay, go ahead.
Project manager.
Right.
And then something happened, the program changed, and then my boss, he got promoted to a higher strategy level, and he said, now you are the program manager, so put more stuff on me. That's fine.
Okay.
Performed well.
Okay.
And was doing well until in one of the meetings that I so heard, he had a go from his superiors on him, and he used me as an scapegoat. And then the next thing is I got exited from there by the company who put me in there.
What would he, if that boss was here, he clearly would say, oh yeah, I scapegoated him. What, if he were here with us, what would he say is the reason you were let go?
Oh, he would say you did bad, and then and you did this and you did that. That's what he would say, but not the customer.
Okay.
So see, this is different. Most of the IT firms today, they are working through contracting companies.
I know. Alas, it's true, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, contracting, and even if they're not contracting companies,
right.
If they're companies like Accenture or these.
I know, it's disgusting. It's really abusive of workers. I hate it. Continue.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you are in term, you are full time for them, but eventually you are contracted. You're considered a contractor.
Makes
there.
It easier for them to dump you. I know. I hate it. Yep.
Yeah, and then the way they exited me is not informing the client. And then told me not to come to the office and not informing them because of expected reaction from the customer.
I see. Okay.
So that happened to me twice, mm-hmm. not once. Mm-hmm. But this was back in 2017, and now in 2018. When I joined 2017, the second customer was a healthcare customer. The company was doing 45% on a CSAT.
45%? Well, I didn't hear that. 45% what?
On CSAT. CSAT is customer satisfaction.
They're, oh, okay. All right. Okay, thank you.
Like a, yeah. So they were doing 45% and were given a notice of 3 months to put their act together or they will be exited. So they bring me in as a program manager.
Mm-hmm.
I do put, they put in stuff, do train, yeah, do my thing. In 6 months, the CSAT comes to 98%.
Wow.
And that was above the average of the company. Company itself, we were averaging like that.
Okay, I want you to tell me in 30 seconds what you did that made that happen. That's a remarkable improvement, because the reason I'm asking you is not just for our listeners to hear that, but because it will inform the kind of story that you're going to tell when you're trying to get your next job. What did you do to go make it go from 35 to 90? Customer satisfaction?
45
to 98. 45
yeah. to 98,
right.
So, first thing, I observed the daily work schedule and assessed what is the need, what is the client needing, what is the problem, find the problem. The root cause of the problem were the resources put onto work were not trained enough. A, were following certain pattern that they were used to, and B, they were not catering to the needs of the customer. The customer comes first. It's a support. So I made certain changes, removed the lead of the offshore. There was an offshore component and onshore component. Removed them, brought in some more people, and start training them and having them one-on-one session on what they had on their plate on a daily basis.
And how did you motivate the unmotivated? You said they didn't put the customers first. What did you do to motivate some of those unmotivated people to put the customer first?
I put my hands in and showed them how.
Uh-huh.
And then help them. I said, you call me, you holler at me.
Good.
Even if it's a day or it's a night,
wow.
You can contact me. I left
wow.
my messenger thingy on.
Great stories.
This
okay.
is much the effort I put in. And they not only came to 98%, the customer offered a managed services contract to the company.
Wow. I am very happy to hear this. Now continue. Now that's a really that's a great nugget, and it's a great way to neutralize them having been let go twice. Now tell me your actual question. Is your question how to explain?
My question is, despite of all this,
right?
After having this, they give the credit to somebody who was not even on in the picture, and they remove me from that account or from that customer.
What was that? What was that about? Why did they do that?
They brought somebody else. They said,
why?
Oh, they don't want you.
Why? What do you think the real reason is? You know, not, we all tend to have good self-esteem and they blame everything else. What do you think the reason, after you've had this amazing success in improving the customer satisfaction rate, why would that employer not want you?
I don't believe they're truthful in this thing that the account did not want me.
What do you think the real reason? What was really
because
the reason?
When you remove someone, you don't remove them without informing the customer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's and not specifically when you are on, I was on PTO when I got that, oh, we have removed you from the account.
So I really don't even care about what the real reason, because we're being so speculative. What I'm interested in is you're calling me because you're trying to get another job. Is that correct or is that wrong?
I just got another job. I'm on the first day here in the Bay Area.
I see.
So I don't want to do the same mistake again. That's why I called you.
Well, you've not told me about any mistakes. You've told me you were good and that you were unfairly scapegoated. And in this case, despite being a superstar, I mean, a superstar accomplishment, they let you go. So I'm not hearing. So if there was a God, what would the God tell you was your mistake? You used the word, I remember in the very beginning of the call, you used the word politics. Specifically, what lesson should be learned if you're really being honest with yourself that you need to promise yourself that you're going to do on this new job so that you get the credit you deserve and you're not back looking for another job soon?
So be less upfront and be not say everything in front of everybody. That's the only thing I can see in myself.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. You know, it is a rule. The Bay Area is notable for its politeness. We're like human beings like anybody else and have ill feelings. But generally, it is considered a great sin, for example, in a meeting, to be too critical of anybody. If you got something bad to say, you say it privately and you say it very tactfully. Have you been too negative in meetings, therefore embarrassing people?
Okay, so that was the case maybe 2 years ago. You read it right.
Okay.
But I changed it. And then that's why I mentioned that I had one-on-one with these folks.
Okay, let's go down this path a little bit. It's unfortunate. I wish humans in some ways were a little more like computers. If you program them right, they're going to do what you tell them. But human beings have emotions. And so the really sophisticated worker, whether you're an entry-level worker or you're the CEO, is constantly evaluating the risks and rewards of candor versus holding back. How important is it that you bring up this criticism? How can you word it so that it's tactful and doesn't make the person feel bad? How should you do it publicly or privately? You know, really thinking through not just the rational facts of the situation, but considering that you're not dealing with a computer, you say you're an IT guy. You're not dealing with a computer. You're dealing with a human being who doesn't react as predictably. Is that your problem, and is that what you need to stay very vigilant about on a case-by-case basis?
I got it.
Is that right?
I got that part. And
okay.
I think part of this, if I may add here,
sure,
is I sometimes expect them to do what they're supposed to do. And then I have no mercy for folks who are playing games or who kind of wasting time or giving you a merry-go-round.
You know, I'm not a Christian, but the Christian serenity prayer that says, grant me the wisdom to know the difference between what I can and can't change and accept what I can't is so important. We are all of us. Every human being is a product of our genes, our early environment, the crap that's happening to us in our lives, our personal lives, the good things, and even shrinks who get paid a lot of money every hour to try to improve somebody have a hard time doing it even if they spend years on the couch with them. So you, who are a coworker or a manager, if somebody is really, somebody is playing games and is lazy or not competent or whatever, you have to normally not be too, the fancy word is hubristic, not so confident that you could change it by being confrontational. In general, it's wise to basically accept people as they are. Yes, you can tweak around the edges. And it's true of marriage as well. I've been with my wife now for many years. And one of the keys to our good marriage is we accept our basic selves, and any kind of efforts to change, we usually initiate in on trying to change ourselves, not tell the other person to change. And if we do want the other person to change, we make it's minor, really fixable things. Do you need to accept people's basic characteristics and not try to so change them?
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Okay. I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Okay, I'll give out the phone number again. I love helping people solve their work problems. This is, frankly, we all, I wish that everybody felt they had a mission in life. My core mission in life is helping people with their work-related problems, and it is my privilege to do it here for free for you on KALW. It's my pro bono work. So if you would like, if you've listened to these calls we've had today, I can be pretty darn helpful pretty darn fast. So if you'd like me to try to help you, the price is certainly right, zero. Phone number for what I call a workover, with no pummeling involved usually, is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I want to share with you some more insights that I've had that are new. I always like to stay fresh because I've been on the air almost 29 years. I'm obsessed with the idea of not being redundant. And there's a new insight I've had that I think is helpful to many people, whether or not they're looking to make a career change, maybe just for personal growth. Whatever lessons that you can mine, you know, M-I-N-E, from reviewing your past problems or whatever, usually can be learned from just 30 minutes of journaling. Look, like on this previous call, we just very quickly revisited the last two jobs, and I probed hard to see what his contribution to the problem was. And I would guess, you know, not you, nobody can guarantee, but even if he spent weeks mulling over it, meditating, ruminating, whatever, he might not find anything else that he needs to do other than that issue of having more realistic expectations of people and recognizing when it's worth pushing them to change or not. So usually, whatever lessons, as I said, can be mined from reviewing your past iniquities can usually be learned from just maybe 30 minutes of journaling. Journaling is great because it's empowering to you. You're not relying on other people's opinions, which can feel disempowering, and they often don't get what's really going on. 30 minutes of journaling. From that point, it's usually, never always, but it's usually wiser to focus on suppressing those miring thoughts and taking the next step forward than more rumination, more reflection. Too often what that additional reflection is, it doesn't yield any more insights, but it increases your resentment. So if you have anger for what your boss did to you or a coworker did to you, that additional rumination is merely more likely to exacerbate your negative feelings about that boss, putting a chip on your shoulder and maybe even demotivating you to go and look for another job. Whereas if you take the lesson that can be learned in that 15, 30 minutes, whatever, and then take the next baby step forward, you are much more likely to move forward. So it was just an insight I had. A phone number again, if you have a work-related problem, I'd like to help you solve it. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another insight I've had recently, I had a client recently opine that his procrastination problem is at least partially caused by school. There is a lot of grade inflation. And cramming is not, you know, therefore punished, because some, you know, I know that plenty of people wait till the last second to do their school paper, and then lo and behold, they turn it in and they didn't get a bad grade. Well, that reinforces that it's okay to procrastinate and let the adrenaline rush of the 11th hour work motivate you. And actually, you know, that occurs not just in elementary school or in college, but even in graduate school. You know, they really do encourage you to do a long exploration of a topic. It's valued. It's considered reflective. But I think in most real-world jobs, employers or customers are willing to pay you mainly for only moderate reflection, moderate detail-orientedness, moderate procrastination, rumination. So whether you are tackling a task and you're thinking about being really perfectionistic about it because you're afraid you're going to fail, or you're procrastinating about it because school, you know, led you to try to rely on you, let you to feel you could rely on your adrenaline, I invite you to ask yourself, what is that moderate level of difficulty that you should do a task so that you're not so motivated to procrastinate? Because if it's got to make it perfect, then, you know, it becomes so daunting a mountain that you don't want to even climb. You just want to have a beer at the base of the mountain. Okay, another of these insights that I've had recently that have been helpful to my clients, hopefully to you. Social scientists are ever flailing to find factors that are more malleable, that is, more subject to change than intelligence, because they want to give hope to people who are struggling. Unfortunately, like there are these recent fads. There was something called power pose. If you just stand a certain way, that's going to make you more powerful. Or grit. You know, the goal here is not to get more skilled, it's just to have more grit and be stick-to-itness. Those are really pretty simple. Growth mindset, that was another one. You know, if you just have a growth mindset, you'll do better. Well, there have been solid good studies over the last 2 years that those really have far less potency than was advertised by the researchers who developed those. It really is wise, as I said to the previous caller, to accept your core strengths and your weaknesses and place yourself appropriately. Right? My strength, I like to use words, whether it be writing or speaking, and I like to think on my feet. So I created a work life in which I get to do that. I'm a career counselor during the week where I have to think on my feet, and I do this radio show once a week as another opportunity to use words and my career counseling experience. But I'm not good in an organization. You don't want me in an organization. I'm too impatient to deal with the slow pace of most organizations. So I recognize that, and so I'm self-employed. And I need you to ask yourself that too, rather than succumb to the notion that all you need is more grit, more growth mindset, and let alone standing in power poses, that you need to accept your core strengths and weaknesses and place yourself appropriately. One other such insight that I like to think I've had recently. Many younger graduates have been educated to hate corporations. And I think that is an under-discussed reason that many companies are opting to automate, opting to offshore, opting to part-time and temp. And also so that a bad employee can get let go with less risk of lawsuit. You know, nobody wants to feel like they're hiring somebody who quietly, privately hates their guts. And so if you are a job seeker wanting to work for a for-profit, it probably couldn't hurt to make clear, without lying, your honest feelings about at least that company, which can be reassuring to that employer that you are, you know, not just somebody who wants to stick it to the man. And if you don't feel comfortable working for a company, then fine. Then work for a nonprofit, work for a government agency, start your own ethical small business. But I do see a lot of my clients who come away pretty anti-corporate from their college experience, and they wear that on their sleeves enough. And it can be subtle. I mean, I personally have nothing against tattoos or piercings or whatever. But in some workplaces that are mainstream workplaces, the refusal to take out your 5 earrings and your nose piercing and to, you know, have a short sleeve shirt where you've got tattoos all the way up and down your arm is basically telling the company, I don't care about norms. I don't care about the standard mainstream norms. I need to be who I am. And that's fine, of course, but it signals to certain mainstream companies and maybe law firms that you really hate them and that you're at least you're a risky employee, the kind of employee who might go and really try to steal from the company or put the minimum work in or, you know, spend 3 or 4 hours a day as much as possible, you know, doing work at work time, doing stuff for fun or taking lots of undeserved, you know, leave. So just a thought, you know, that as an antidote to, you know, the so many of my clients who are befuddled as to why they're not getting a corporate job, even though they're quite bright and otherwise capable. Phone number again, if you have a work-related problem, happy to help you try to solve it. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KLW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Couple of more of these, you know, quickie insights that I think may be of value to you. You know, we continue to, you know, say again and again, we meaning career counselors and even friends, we tell people, got to network, 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 network. And on a human basis, I'm now sharing you not career advice as much as a human feeling. It makes me sad that focus on networking, you know, it's more important who you know than what you know. That leads to hiring based more on connections than on competence. And that can't be good for the world. And it certainly can't be good for the more competent worker who doesn't schmooze and doesn't network, but is really good and rather puts his or her discretionary time into getting better at their craft. Whereas somebody else might spend their time, you know, pressing the flesh and schmoozing and kissing up. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Yes, my name's Paula, and I'm 62, mm-hmm. looking for new work, okay. and kind of just stuck.
Okay.
It's just been a challenge.
Great. Tell me, not that it's great that you're stuck, but I love that you call. I'll do my very best to help you, of course. So give me a couple of clues that will help us start in the right direction.
Okay, I'm in the design field.
Okay. What kind? There are many kinds of design.
Interior design.
Okay.
And I'm actually tired of it.
Okay.
For a lot of reasons.
Okay, tell me why. What are you tired of?
A lot of stress, and it's become a field where people feel very entitled.
Mm.
And it's just...
What do you mean by that?
Oh, their attitudes.
When you say they're... So you're talking about the customer feeling entitled?
The customer, the designers, and then challenges with just the whole ramifications of the whole line, because I've worked in all areas
of
it.
Okay, tell me one anecdote that brings that to life.
What do you mean by one anecdote?
One anecdote. It's a story that of some either customer or another interior designer who felt entitled. I want my listeners to get a vivid picture.
Oh, I actually had a rep where we were having an issue with a problem, and he had told the customer, we will try and get this resolved for you in this particular way. So I wrote him and said, can you please try and do this? He says, what the hell do you want me to do? I'm doing my best.
Okay, and you think he was wrong in that?
Oh, he was totally unprofessional.
What was the... What was it, curtain or something, or fabric? What was it?
No, furniture.
It was a piece of furniture, okay. Forgive me for laughing, because I guess maybe that's part... Is part of it also, there is something... Well, you know, certainly there is value to interior design because aesthetics matter and form follows function and all the rest of it. But
right.
is part of your disenchantment also that it ultimately doesn't feel that meaningful, especially in this charged era where we feel the nation is roiling... That worrying about whether you use a chintz or a...
I do it all the time. I tell people it's not an arm or a leg. It's just a piece of furniture.
Exactly. So tell me more about either not what you were unhappy with interior design, but tell me more what a couple of clues about the... you've obviously been musing about this before you called me. What general areas or what non-negotiables are you thinking about in terms of moving forward in your life, Paula?
Well, I would like to be in something where I've worked for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that arena too, and it you know worked for a while, but it wasn't consistent enough.
I understand.
And so that's when I went back to working for somebody.
Right.
And ideally, I don't want to work nights. I don't want to work weekends.
Okay.
I don't want to work for somebody who's so controlling that
sure.
I'm just like a peon.
Of course, nobody does.
I have a brain.
Great. Yeah, nobody wants to be controlled. Study after study shows that a measure of autonomy, even for people who like structure, is one of the critical and under-discussed elements of job satisfaction. So no
Makes
problem.
Sense.
So regular hours and a reasonable amount of trust from the employer so you don't feel you're micromanaged.
Correct.
Okay, tell me some more clues about what, again, I like to invoke the goddess or the god.
Okay.
What would the goddess say your best natural gifts and acquired skills are?
Well, my natural gifts. Probably my aesthetics. I mean, I do photography,
uh-huh.
and I'm really good at like seeing things and visualizing
okay.
and putting them together. I mean, that's obviously why I've been an interior designer for so long.
Uh-huh.
What
do you care about?
I care about people. As crazy as it is, as nuts as this world gets, I still care about people.
Sure you do. And some people care about all people. Others care about women, men, older people, younger people, people with disabilities, people who are gifted, people in local, people who are far away. Is there some subcategory, people with a mental illness, physical illness, is there some category of people that particularly moves your heart?
The two categories that move my heart are older people and children.
Okay. And older people, or because you're 62, let's try to use your age to your advantage.
Okay.
Because working with children, you don't have an edge, whereas
right.
you're working with older people, you have an edge. So let's, since you care about older people, let's go there. So is it older people with a problem, or just, there are older people just looking for stuff to do? There are entities that create elder travel and elder education.
Part of what I've done is downsizing projects,
okay.
And what I've liked about doing that, and I don't know if you know what that is.
Sure, I do.
Okay.
For people who don't know,
regular interior design, the people really appreciate that what I bring to the plate.
Love it. Okay, so for those who don't know, it's clearly people who may have lived in a house, and now because of physical infirmities, they simply don't need that much space. They're moving to a condo or an apartment or whatever, and managing what to do with all the stuff, how to intelligently use the space and the furniture. Is that a fair summary?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So, and are there? Does the goddess within you say you'd be wiser to, and these are three choices, work for a firm that specializes in that, do that yourself, or have nothing to do with it? And also, you can incorporate your photography, by the way. There's no reason you can't take before and after pictures you put on the website and in front of give to the customers as a nice little bonus. Do you want to, A, do that, focus only on downsizing homes, or for a self-employed, working for a very reputable firm and only for a good boss who's not going to micromanage you, or your next work should have nothing to do with any of that?
I would say I'm open to the two, other than it doesn't have anything to do with it. I could go both ways, in terms of do self-employed again and doing that all the time, but it's like, how do I get that built? As opposed to working for somebody and I don't have to take home the headache, but they would make more money than I would.
Well, it sounds like this, you have a plan A, plan B. It sounds like plan A is to, if you already don't know of it, to find the three is usually a magic number, the three companies that are ethical, excellent, have great Yelp reviews, whatever, who specialize in downsizing. And either write to them or phone them, whichever you feel more comfortable, telling your truth. You say all your years of doing interior design, what you have felt best about and your customers have felt best about has been downsizing. And wondering if they have a need for a person or have some advice for you. And if that all fails, then you can, or simultaneously, you can make out a startup, write a very simple little business plan for what you would do. What is the Paula way of trying to get business? Is it through your past clients? Is it through your friends? Is it through advertisements, giving talks at the libraries, whatever? If I said that's the A-B punch, 1-2 punch, which would leverage your skills and your interests, and if that doesn't work, you can always think of something else. How does that feel to Paula?
Those both feel good. I mean, that all feels good.
Awesome. I'm very glad you called Work with Marty Nemko.
Okay, thank you.
Take care and be well.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can, you know what I'm going to do? My wife, Barbara Nemko, is going to be here. And we're going to revisit the most interesting debates that we've ever had in our 29 years here at KALW about your work life, about all of our work lives. And I'm also going to talk about what I think are crucial and under-discussed issues about moving forward, not just looking backward to our past, plus some fresh career tips for people in the second half of their lives. Until then, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.